Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work.
All right, it's Andrew Nielsen here with me today. So excited.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining me, Andrew. So glad you're here.
I'm excited to be here.
Woohoo.
Bonnie time.
It is Bonnie time. Let's dive in, starting with how Bonnie time first became a part of your life, if you don't mind taking me back through memory lane.
Yeah. I first heard about your book through Crawford Collins, who I think you've met.
Yes, she did the Barrow Group class with us in New York.
Mm-hmm. Right. So she told me about your book, and then actually through the Barrow Group, I met Tanya Perez.
Love
and
her.
Then Tanya reached out and said, you know, my friend Bonnie's doing a workshop. And I was like, Bonnie? Like Bonnie Gillespie? She was like, yes, indeed. So, and that's how I met you. We had a great day and got to hang out a little bit in person. And here we are.
And,
that was 2013.
I was going to say, that's been a few years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little while. Oh, awesome. Awesome. Before that, take us through your creative journey back before Crawford was so lovely to mention my book and get me on your radar. What kinds of things started you out? Take us from the very beginning of knowing you were going to be a creative and a hyphenate, and we're going to talk about all the awesome things that you do. Where did that spark come from for you?
I think I always kind of was in creative in a lot of, like, different ways. Like, not only was I very animated and loved to reenact scenes from movies and had a crazy memory to do dialogue from movies for my parents, but I also was always writing, like, little books and short stories, and I used to have this, like, cardboard box where I would put on musicals for my family. I would use my Playmobil on strings with, like, backgrounds and turn on, like, the Sound of Music soundtrack and make them sit and watch it. So I've been doing that, like, my whole life.
That's fantastic.
I was that terror.
It sounds very familiar to me because I did that as well. So I think it's fabulous. And of course, I know our families are so appreciative of all the hours.
Holding the little
flash. They had to sit. Perfect.
Light spotlight.
Perfect, perfect. So talk me through then as you went through school and started making some choices for yourself creatively and academically. Take us down the path.
Well, I started off in doing, I did theater in high school. I also played cello in high school a lot. Like, that was my, I was really into cello. I was studying, you know, I was practicing several hours a day, you know, doing the musician thing. And when I went to college, I started off as a cello major in Illinois. And then I got to the point where I realized I really don't have the muscle for sitting down and practicing every day when there's not someone forcing me to do it. And so I switched my major, and I went to vocal performance, which to me was more interesting just because I was acting. So it made me want to practice. So it that inspired me to actually, you know, get going. So college was really where I kind of switched gears and said, you know, I kind of want to do performing as an actor more than as a cellist. And then midway through my time in undergrad, I moved to New York City and switched to, like, communications and business.
Like you do.
Like you do. And midway through microeconomics, I think, was when I decided that that wasn't for me. And, like, principles of business and management. And I was like, I don't think I like this. And so I dropped out of college.
So what made you go to New York? Obviously, that's where you are now. So
right.
It turned out to be a great place to stick. But what caused you to just say, I was midway through your degree? Yeah?
I was just itching to get to New York. And, I mean, my family is, I went to a school kind of based on, you know, where my family had gone before me. And, you know, I just realized this isn't really where I want to be. And so I kind of told my parents, you know, I'd like to try out New York for 6 months, and that's how I got there. I told them it was temporary, and then here we are, four and a half years later.
And ever and ever and ever.
Forever, forever and always. Married to New York.
I like to say I have an affair with New York. I guess I'm married to LA, but man, New York is so my mistress. I love that bitch. Boy, she's so sexy. Tell me what it is that, what part it is that cello continues to play in your life, because I know I've spent time watching you on Periscope, playing the cello and taking requests. And I mean, you're just phenomenal, obviously such a fantastic performer, so talented. Is it still a part of your day to day?
Absolutely. For a while I was teaching cello in New York. I don't really do that anymore because that in and of itself is just a full-time endeavor to, you know, get students and bring them in and go travel to them and sit with them. It's a lot, and you have to prepare your lessons and cater to each student individually. So I kind of stopped doing that. But I still play. I'm, you know, this last year I played in an off-Broadway musical for the full run, and then I came back and recorded the cast album in March and got to do the whole studio time thing with like three musicians, which was great. And, you know, I try and stay active. I play a lot of mostly concerts. I played with some people that I grew up idolizing that I've gotten to sit on stage and play with them, you know, one-on-one in front of hundreds and hundreds of people. It's pretty crazy, but that's been my experience with cello, and I still love doing it, but yeah.
Oh, that's so fantastic. I love it. It's just so creative and expressive in a way that acting isn't, but obviously acting became more of a passion for you. I think the phrase you used was that you didn't quite have the muscle for the kinds of practice that it was going to take to really pursue cello professionally. What made you decide acting was something that was a bigger turn on?
I think I realized how much I actually loved acting itself at the Barrow Group. I always kind of loved the idea of acting, and I had acted all through high school and college, so I thought I kind of knew what I was doing. And to a certain extent, I had, you know, instincts that I felt good about, but the Barrow Group is where I kind of fell in love with the idea of actually studying acting and actually working on it and continuing to go back into the same classes with the same teachers or different teachers, and it was a completely different experience that I had never experienced before. And that was what made me fall in love with it. And it's different than cello, because with a musical instrument, of course, acting is technical, but in some ways an instrument to me is more technical because you really have to, you know, have every finger perfectly. You have to have the intonation perfectly. And for me, that was part of the reason I didn't love it, was I'm a perfectionist in my life, but when it comes to little tiny tasks, I'm like, I don't have the attention span for it. And so for me, it wasn't fun. I felt like I was, you know, not wasting time, but I felt like frustrated with it. And acting for me it's just a lot of fun.
I think we never want our art to feel frustrating, even though we can have challenges with it. And I always like to make sure I lay out the difference between having a bad day in acting class versus a challenging day in acting class, because there's no bad day in acting class.
Right.
You're working on your craft, you're building your instrument, you're expressing yourself, learning new things, uncovering stuff about yourself and your storytelling abilities. It can be more challenging sometimes than others.
Right. Challenging. Yeah, of course. Of course you want it to be, you want to have a class that makes you at the end of it feel like you've had like a workout or that you've really given your all in class as much as you can. And yeah.
Let's touch on that a little bit. What is some of your workout as an actor? What is your process and where have you trained now that you've been in New York for several years?
I've been studying at the Barrow Group for 4.5 years. So I started out there taking classes kind of piecemeal. I started out in like a film and TV class, and then I took a directing workshop for actors where I just worked with a bunch of different directors, which was really fun. And then I took the year-long apprentice program, which is basically a work-study program where you stay with one class for a full year.
That's great.
You have class once a week, 4 hours, with the two artistic directors of the theater, which is a treat in and of itself. And you work as your pay. You don't pay anything. You just work there 8 hours a week. It's a really great, it's a great deal, but it's a lot of work. You have to really commit to a full year. You know, you don't go away and come back. It's, you know, you really have to commit to it. So I've been at the Barrow Group, and really what the Barrow Group is about letting go of your own inhibitions and your whatever it is that you think makes you good or think makes you bad, and just do the work. And their motto is Let It Go, which sounds familiar for other reasons, but that's there. That's been their motto much longer than it was Elsa's.
Of course.
And so yeah, that's why I find the joy in it. I've been in other acting classes where I feel the stress and the pressure of people watching me and critiquing me. And that can be healthy in some ways, but I feel like the Bear Group has allowed me to just feel joy in my acting, which is what I want. I have no interest in feeling like bad about my work.
No, for sure. And that's one thing that I have found the times that I've worked with actors at the Barrow Group and through that company there, it's just, there is that we're turned on by what it is that we're here to do factor.
Yeah.
And I find that there are some acting studios where that's not it. It's let's beat you down and make you feel weak and then build you back up and the struggle. And I'm like, oh, there's enough of that already. We don't need that in the craft work.
Every day, just surviving.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now, how did you make a turn into producing? What was it that gave you that inspiration to try something on your own and take it all the way through the production process? I want to hear a little bit about Plant and other things that you've worked on, obviously. But how'd you get excited to do that?
I think it was a twofold kind of process. The first was that around the time we met, or the time I started reading your book, I was still in college, and I was taking a really great playwriting class with Chris Cragenday, who's a professional writer in New York City. She came up through the Public Theater Emerging Writers Group, which is a really prestigious program, and I had never really tried my hand at writing, and she was just, you know, a great teacher. I felt very free to experiment and try things. And at the same time, I was reading Self-Management for Actors, reading about self-producing and the benefits of doing that. And I decided to write something for myself, which is actually how Plant came about, because I'm the son of a pastor. And I wrote about my experiences kind of growing up in the church. And originally, the role of the son was going to be played by me. And then I got knee-deep into production, realized that was not going to happen. Once I had 10 actors and a full crew and an actual shooting schedule and 15 episodes to shoot.
I'm gonna say that's incredibly wise, because there are a lot of people out there who would say, no, I'm hell-bent on this. I wrote this for myself. I am going to stay in this. And yes, it's getting more and more challenging, and there are way too many moving parts to this, but damn it, I'm going to make it work. What allowed you to realize it's going to be better if I don't push myself into too many roles or to wear too many hats, as the saying goes?
Well, my goal was to make it the best I could make it. And I knew that if I was on set every day as the director, as the writer, also, you know, I'm the director and the writer, and I also edit the show. And the way that I set up the release process was really stupid the first season, which is that we filmed 5 episodes, we took some time off, we filmed 10 more episodes, and then while I was editing the episodes, we were releasing them one at a time. So I was on set all day filming. I came home, I edited, and then that week we would put out an episode, like last week's episode. It was kind of like a very, very microcosmic, very low-budget network television type thing, like a few months in advance, you know? Uh-huh. And that was stupid as a first-time producer. And that was the other thing, I think, was that I'd never done this before, and I knew that it would be challenging enough. Just, it was all just blind faith. I was like, I'm going to pray that everyone shows up to set and, like, isn't crazy and knows their lines. That was kind of what the first season was like for me. And that was in 2013 as well, I think. 2013, 2014. 2013.
Wow.
So it was very much blind faith and dumb luck a little bit.
And then take us through the process of what you learned wearing all those various hats and working with these wonderful actors that you brought together in this crew.
I've learned a lot about letting go of both my work as a writer, not that the cast did anything that I didn't like as a writer, but just that what you write on the page before is what you write. And then when you get to set, there's only so much that you can reclaim. And in fact, the actors often end up adding way more than you ever put down. They create a completely different element. In fact, the interesting thing is when I wrote the first 5 episodes of Plant, I had a very specific voice in my mind for the two lead characters. And I wrote them in that voice. And since we then had 6 months between when we filmed the first 5 and the second 10, I now had the actress's voice and the actor's mm-hmm. voice in my mind. And suddenly the characters had their voices. They no longer had the voices that I first wrote for it. So learning to let go and let other people into the creative space and process of making the characters full and round and fun was a big thing that I learned. And the second thing was just kind of to just do it, just to kind of go for it. And there wasn't really time, especially with that tight schedule, there wasn't time to think about if something was possible or if something was not possible, or if I loved the script, I was just doing it. I was just going for it. For the first season, especially. I think the second season, we really did it how we wanted to. We kind of honed down and worked. But the first season was a lot of trial and error, and I learned to be okay with that and to let go of my anxieties about that a little bit. I let go of them a little bit.
A little bit, right. I mean, you mentioned the release schedule and season one, season two. Where were you releasing? Like, because when you first started out, did you strike a deal with someone for distribution, or did you YouTube it, or what was your process?
We put it up on both Vimeo and YouTube. We were pushing most of our traffic through Vimeo because I find higher video quality for me. But we had it on YouTube for accessibility, so people wanted to search for it. And then we just went on mostly web series festival circuit for the first year. And, you know, we got a lot of great responses, some awards for our lead actress. Our lead actress won 5 Best Actress Awards
amazing.
For the first season, which was like, I was so happy that she, you know, got that because she's so amazing. I love her. The second season, then we ended up, our last screening was at the Nashville Film Festival, which felt really great. We were in a large, like, Regal Cinemas theater. We got to see our work up on a big screen and, like, in a packed room, you know, which was just so great. And then the second season, which is releasing in August, and we decided to release through Amazon Video Direct. And that's where we're going to host our second season.
So talk about that process a little bit, because that's kind of a new player in the self-producing and content creation landscape. Mm-hmm. Just in 2016, that Amazon is now inviting independent filmmakers and web content creators to bring their material directly to them for distribution. What was the process like for you to apply to that and ultimately get selected?
Well, it's, I think the thing that's coolest to me about Amazon Video Direct, maybe not coolest, but the thing that makes it feel worth it to release the platform, because I have no lofty goals of making money off of this. Like, it's, for me, I'm not thinking like, oh wow, well maybe I'll make, you know, a big paycheck off of this. I'm doing it mostly for, you know, to be able to just point people in one direction. It's a really, you know, well-known name. They have apps where you can stream their content through their app. People can subscribe to your show for the whole season. And the other thing is that you can't just, it's not like someone can just like film something and put it up on there.
Right.
You have to go through you have to close caption all of your episodes. You have to have very specific artwork requirements and, you know, actually, you know, music requirements and all of that stuff. So it feels like there's a little bit of a barrier to get over. It's not, anyone can technically do it. It's just that you have to put in the work to actually get it up there and get it done, which feels good. And also I think just the priorities within the show changed. I'm no longer super worried about, I don't know. I feel like the first season I was just trying to just get it out there. The second season we've worked really hard on it, and I don't really feel like it needs to necessarily just be available just to find, you know, it's going to be accessible. It's going to be, you know, if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it. We're sending it out to all of our donors, you know, a private watching link and all that stuff. But otherwise, festival circuit.
And so you'll take it to festivals again for season two. And did everybody come back from season one to season two, or did you lose any of your cast?
We brought back our full core cast, like all of our series regulars and all of our recurring guest stars. We had two recurring guest stars who didn't come back, but it wasn't, you know, they were just, you know, doing other projects. We brought on 3 really great performers, one of whom has known me since I was like 13. She's the only person in the cast who knew me before we started filming Plant. And she knew me when I was like the most awkward child. And then The other one, his name is David Sittler, and he's a, you know, big Broadway regional theater guy. And then Carolyn Popp, who played Stephen Colbert's wife on Strangers with Candy, opposite Amy Sedaris. So that was really fun.
How'd you get these folks?
Well, honestly, I mean, I think two things. Number one, I mean, this is not about me, but I think the scripts kind of stands out a little bit. I think the first season we did as good of a job as we possibly could have given the budget we're working on. I think when people see season two, they're going to be shocked. I mean, I'm telling you right now, like, we spent maybe $7,000 on 100 minutes and it looks and sounds awesome. And that's not me. That's all everyone else. So I feel comfortable saying that, but I think that we had a good reputation. And also I just think, I don't know. David was the first one to audition. He's a recurring guest star on this season. And actually Carolyn is his wife. And so that's how we kind of got connected, but they're just very talented actors. And I think that, I don't know how to say how I got them. I just feel like really lucky that they said yes.
I'm just more curious. Did you put out a breakdown? Did you call agents? Did you, you know, ask for favors within your network? More about that part of the process is what I was thinking.
Sure. Yeah. We put it all out through Actors Access. We got a really fair number of submissions. You probably know a lot about what the average is for a project. I mean, I would say for most of our guest stars, we were getting 300 or 400, which to me felt like really sorting through stuff. I was like, and we did a mix of self-tapes and of, in-person auditions. I actually prefer self-tapes, actually. I love being able to watch people in the comfort of my own room and being able to see them on camera. I get very uncomfortable in in-person auditions.
Let's pivot on that, and you tell me, has that changed how you feel when you, as an actor, are requested to do a self-tape? Because I know a lot of actors kind of are like, oh, I so want to get in the room. I need that energy. Oh, are you now
I
going,
love self-taping.
Yeah?
I love it. For film and TV. Theater, I really don't like self-taping, which I have to do sometimes. But just because I feel like with theater, you know, you're kind of more so are dependent on the energy of the room.
Totally.
The nice thing for me about self-taping for, like, film or TV is just that you can do unlimited takes. You're in a place where you feel comfortable. There's none of the external stuff, just the external noise of going into a casting office and the nerves are running high, and I just don't feel like I do my 100% best work. Sometimes you do. The stress makes you, but I don't know. I like it. I think it's fun.
That's very cool. Well, good. Tell me where, and tell everyone, please, where we can watch. I know season two is going to come out on Amazon in August.
Right.
What season one, if we want to get up to speed and binge watch before season two comes out, where do we go?
Yeah. It's all at plantwebseries.com, and you can watch all 15 episodes and our season two teaser there.
Oh, so exciting. Yeah. And then what about for you, and what's going on with you in your acting life, and are there other projects that you're hankering to create?
Yeah. I'm writing another project right now with my, I wrote all of season one of Plant alone. Season two, I brought in a really great co-writer who has just been like a blessing. He's just so wonderful and I love working with him. And we really enjoyed working together for this season. So we actually started working on another project that we're really excited about. We've been developing it and we're waiting to hear back some news about it. So yeah. But I'm really excited about that. And it's nice to get away from Plant a little bit, as much as I love it. I've been working on it for 3.5 years. So it's a little, it's nice to be working on something else. And of course I have other scripts going on a lot, and then right now I'm in rehearsals for a new musical that I've done 2 workshops of, but this is the first actual, production of it, which is really fun and, you know, back into actual rehearsal schedules, which is very bizarre for me.
Intense and exciting as always. Yes.
It's fun. Yeah. I like it.
And so how can folks keep tabs on you? Are you big on social media? Where can we plug in with you on like a personal website, or do you tweet? What's your thing?
Twitter is my favorite.
Mine
I'm
too.
At Andrew Nielsen. Yeah, I just like it. It's fun. It's instant. It's great.
And spell Nielsen for everyone because I know there are a couple different ways it can go.
Yeah, it's Andrew, Nielson. I'm on Facebook too, but Twitter's the best. I like Twitter.
I just figured Twitter for me has been something that's improved my writing vastly. Because if I can be clever or funny or make you think in 140
totally.
Characters, I found it changed self-management for actors, actually, because I got the brilliant idea in 2009 to get a Twitter account for the book. And I said, its job is going to be one tweet a day from the book.
Wow.
And in my mind, it was just, that's a way to promote. And, you know, there'll be people who follow the book and those are people that are fans of the book. It'll be great. I found in editing between the third edition and the fourth edition, I was able to take the rewrites that I had to do in order to get stuff to fit at Twitter to mm-hmm. make the book a little more tight and economical a read for the fourth edition. So I think it's a fantastic tool as social media goes.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And it's also, I feel like as far as like people connecting with you, to me, it's like an extension of texting to me because it just pops up on my phone and says, this person, you know, mentioned you on Twitter. And then I just swipe and then I respond, you know, it's so quick. It's, I like that. It's cool.
Yeah. I like the light commitment. It's like, it's easy.
Yeah. It's easy.
And do you have a website where we can go and check out all your various things?
Yeah. It's just andrewnielsen.com. That's where all of my
you got
all
your
my
brand. It's so good to get your brand because so many other people have your same name and go grab it, and then you got to come up with some other version of your website. So if you can,
I have to figure that out because there's actually quite a few Andrew Nielsen's that are, I think, or there's like at least one that is SAG. So figure that out.
Yeah, but the good news is with the union, it used to be because there could be confusion in your pay and your residuals. You couldn't join with a name that someone already had. You had to put an initial or whatever. And in the day of computers and everything happening through your social security number or your federal ID, it's like it doesn't matter. It's as long as it's actually like you couldn't go join and change your name to Tom Cruise to like have that name. But
oh no,
your plan is thwarted. All right, you want to do a little brand prov?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, you do musicals. What is the number one of obviously musicals that exist that has the role that is yours to play before you die?
Fagin and Oliver.
Woo!
When I'm like, when I've progressed in age, I just, I've always wanted to play that role.
Oh, that's
like,
good.
Anywhere between like 40 and 60, let me play that role. That's what I want.
You have decades for that to come. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm ready. It's all memorized. Like, I'll do, like, I'm ready. Don't worry. Like,
fantastic.
I'm ready to go on.
Fantastic. All right. You are walking through life, the theme music that plays you on as you go about your day. What is it?
Ooh. Probably if it's a good day, like something upbeat Carole King-y.
Like
if it's a mellow day where I kind of feel like being introspective and like lighting a candle and drinking some wine, like Rufus Wainwright.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. Probably some like
good range.
The song "The Art Teacher" by Rufus Wainwright kind of encapsulates to me like a very somber day. That would be my choice.
Good, good. Okay, you are showing up at the red carpet. This is a 3-part question.
Oh,
so you're here in LA for the Oscars. So there is a vehicle involved. In what do you roll up? Who are you wearing? And who's on your arm?
Okay. I probably just roll up in a black car. I don't really know anything about cars, so it's black.
That's great. So New York, you're like, it's a car.
Like a taxi? I roll up in an Uber.
An Uber. Perfect.
Like, let's be real. who am I wearing? Probably like Tom Ford probably Tom Ford. Yeah. Who's on my arm? Damn, I feel like I usually go to the Oscars solo. But that's what I started to say.
I love that. I like that. That's already the way it's
usually
set in your brain.
I don't know. I'd probably bring like my best friend or something. I feel like I would want to feel very low key, like very like not anxious.
Yeah.
So either alone, because I feel like having someone with me makes me very anxious in any circumstance. Like if I'm going to an audition or like,
yeah,
and someone's like, oh, I'm going that way today. Like, can I wait?
No, that other person factor is then just energetically someone else's stuff you got to like look out for and, you know,
right,
concern yourself with what kind of time are they having. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really get that.
Julie Andrews is probably on my arm.
Okay.
Or on my shoulder.
Always.
Always on my shoulder.
Why not? I love it.
Why not?
That's fantastic. And Andrew, if you could go back to your youngest self and give yourself a little advice or pep talk words of wisdom that would have made a difference at any time during your journey, even to this point right this second, what would that have been?
Probably just give myself a hug and just say, keep going, or just chill.
I love it.
Chill, yeah.
Chill is good. The Frozen theme comes back with the let it go.
Right, and let it go. The Barrow Group. And we're full circle.
Right. Wait.
That was planned, right?
How did I know?
How did you know?
Andrew, you're fantastic. I'm so grateful to you for sharing this time with me on The Work.
It was fun. I loved it. It was fun.
Hooray!
All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja.